You're listening to the Just One Outdoors Podcast.
Hey guys, before we jump into this week's episode, wanted to let you know of an awesome opportunity for you guys. We've teamed up with the Camo Preacher and Bear Level to give away a 3-day hog hunt in Central Alabama. It's going to be a blast. Head over to our Instagram to find out more details on how to get entered and what's involved, and we hope to see you there.
Welcome back to another episode. Today we are officially getting into some fishing. Feels like that we've been on hunting talk, hunting whatever for a while now. Finally getting into some better weather, although today, really last night, we dropped like 40 or 50 degrees overnight. I forgot to turn the heat on in the house.
Oh, no.
And yeah, so I was telling Jacob before we started recording, it was like a little too warm for what Ash and I like for going to sleep. It was like 72, 73. And so we normally like it around 68. So I turned the AC on and got it down to 68 and just forgot. And then the temperature dropped like 50 degrees in 12 hours or something crazy like that. And I woke up and it was like 56 in the house, 57. I was freezing cold this morning. It was so much harder to get out of bed. But today we've got Jacob. Jacob is a big gigger, hunter. Today, yeah, gigger.
I like it, gigger.
Today we're going to be talking a little bit about gigging, and Austin and I are pretty excited to hear about it. I've been a couple times. Austin's been bow fishing. Not really gigging, though, right?
No, not gigging.
Yeah, so
we also have to throw out that and brag a little bit on him being, you got second at our squirrel tournament on probably the worst day to squirrel hunt we've had this year. It was rainy, squirrels were not out, and they managed to get second. It was you and your wife, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and the people that beat them, I'm pretty sure they had frozen squirrels because they brought in so many. It was crazy, but congrats on second place again.
Thanks.
So, Jacob, thanks for being on today. And looked like you were about to say something. So,
I just said thanks.
Okay. Easy enough.
Glad to be here.
So, can you go ahead and just introduce yourself and then we'll kind of just chat it up?
All right. So, my name is Jacob McIntosh. I lived in this area all my life. I'm ninth generation in this area.
Wow.
Just grew up. I lived near the James River. I've been down there my whole life. That's where I've, you know, hunted, fished, trapped, gigged. So.
Wait, you know something about trapping?
A little bit, yeah. I don't trap nearly as – when I was in high school, I trapped a lot. Like, I'd get up at, like, 3:30 in the morning, run traps, go to school, work at the grocery store in Clever, come home, skin, go to bed, do it all over again. But since I've got an actual job, I work all the time, I don't do it nearly as much anymore.
So me and a buddy, I know we were going to talk about gigging, but me and a buddy have thrown out traps, and I mean, we've set them, we feel good about them, and I mean, they've only been out, I want to say 3 full days. We were like, hey, season's ending, and he had a bobcat on camera, so we're like, hey, let's try and get it. And I mean, we made these sets, and I'm looking at it going, dude, these look good. And they have not been touched by anything. And I did the same thing last year. So I might have to, after this podcast, talk to you about trapping and get your advice on it.
Okay.
Yeah, I've watched a couple trapping videos on it, like YouTube, and seen some like reels on Instagram. And I haven't really ever tried it out. I know you have, and that's probably why I haven't, is because you've never got anything, really. A lot of what I've seen though is like raccoons seem like the kind of easy ones to get. I feel like a bobcat is harder. I don't know. Maybe there's just more raccoons than there are bobcats, but raccoons seem like the easy ones to get, but same sort of thing. Like on the videos you're watching, you think, yeah, this is a great spot. That's a great spot. And they come back the next day and there's nothing. It's like, well,
so what did you trap for? Did you trap for just anything, or did you go after, like you said, you were by the James. So did you go after like river otters or things like that?
Mostly I was a water trap. There's a creek that goes through our place, and I had permission to trap a good portion of it. I trapped a lot of like coons and muskrats, otters, a few beavers.
That's pretty cool.
Mink. I never caught a bobcat. I've tried, and I've just never seen a lot of bobcats down there where we live at. I don't know, you know, why it is, but.
Pretty soon you're going to have to start throwing out, like, bear traps down there. They're slowly making their way up this way. Yeah. But, so grew up here. You said ninth generation.
Yes.
That's crazy. Yeah. Like, that's pretty cool. So you have some deep roots here.
Yes, yeah.
All, like, same area?
Pretty much, yeah. So it's the Gold family is my farthest back, if you trace it back. And, yeah, pretty much they were maybe, like, 3 or 4 miles from where we live at now.
Dang. I wonder, do you have, like, old pictures from back then of, like, what the James looked like back then compared to
that? I have one picture of the James River, but it doesn't say where it's at.
Yeah.
So just, you know, it's just a picture. I've heard people talk about it that would have been, you know, they grew up here like in the 30s, late 20s, and they talk about it's way deeper, much cleaner, like had repopulating trout in it.
Had trout in it?
Yeah. There was a guy, he's passed away. He lived in Jamesville, and I've heard him talk about gigging trout. Which illegal. It was illegal when he was doing it, but it was in the 30s. And, he said that it was not uncommon to kill some in the James River.
Huh. I have heard the modern, whatever it is, the bait shop.
Yeah,
modern. The tackle shop. Yeah. Modern Outdoors, that's what it is. I have heard that one guy will go, I think he's caught a couple trout. But it's, like, few and far between, which that's just crazy to think that the James were, you know, we're mostly pulling out smallmouth, maybe a largemouth, but mainly bass.
Yeah.
And to have trout there, that's pretty cool.
We've all heard the saying, a picture tells 1,000 words, and the same can be said for deer mounts. A skull on the wall represents so much more than just a successful hunt. It represents the culmination of lots of work, some luck, and rich memories with friends and family. At Just One, we like to hang our skulls with skull hangers from Kibosh Outdoors. The hangers are secure, super easy to set up, and made in the US. They even have hangers for as little as $9 to get your skull sitting proudly at the perfect angle. Go check them out at KiboshOutdoors.com or follow the link in our bios and use code JUSTONE at checkout to save 10% on your order.
So, gigging. Let's get into it. More commonly known as frog gigging. So talk a little bit about gigging, what you do, how you do it, and things like that.
So when we go, we're gigging mostly for suckers. You can kill like gar, all your rough fish, gar, buffalo, carp. And we do kill some carp early in the year, but we just, on our flat bottom boat, we've got an outboard jet. LED lights. We run a generator now. That's new for us this year. We were running off batteries, but switched to a little better brand of LED lights, and they just they can run 24 volt, but they work a lot better on a generator. They're a lot more reliable. There's a lot less to worry about. Did we remember to charge the battery from last time or whatever? You just plug it in. If it's got gas in it, it'll run.
Have there been any situations that were kind of dicey when you were out on the river?
Yeah. Before we had the boat we have now, we used to gig out of a boat that was like 14 feet long, 32 inches wide. The closest I've ever come to falling in is twice, and it was both times in that boat. And I always, guys like my grandpa's age and stuff, they always told me if you gig, you're going to fall in. So, maybe it'll still happen, but you'd have to pretty much jump in to fall out of the boat I've got now. But we were below Hootentown, below a place called the Natural Arch, which is a big limestone archway. Basically, looks like the mouth of a cave, but it doesn't go anywhere. And there's a shoal there that is kind of stair steps down. It's not really a waterfall, but it creates a pretty bad riffle. And we went down that, got sideways. Water came over the inside of the boat, killed our lights. We have no lights. We got down through it, got it straightened out, and drug it back up. And we were pretty lucky. There were some people down there at a little cabin on the side of the river. They were also gigging, and so they gave us a ride around to our truck and a trailer, and we went home. We didn't kill any fish that night either.
That just adds salt to the wounds, yeah. Right there.
And the other time that was probably the sketchiest, it was October, early October. The season opens in the middle of September. Me and two guys I worked with were gigging right there at Hootentown, and it's warm, so there's bugs around the light. Some bats are, like, swooping down, eating the bugs. Well, a bat lands on the guy running the boat, and he freaks out. And so I'm trying to, like, I can't see him because he's behind me, and I'm just looking forward. Every time he leans, I got to counteract so we don't tip the boat over. But after that other experience, my dad said, we're not going anymore without getting a bigger boat, and we got a bigger boat.
So you go quite a bit with your dad, right?
Yeah.
And how old is he?
My dad is 51 now.
Dude, that's crazy. My dad is a lot older than your dad. How's that even possible? But is there – so you said season opens in September?
September 15th, same day as bow season.
Man, that's a tough choice.
That just adds to it because I think teal season opens – it's either the 9th or the 15th. Yeah. I can't remember which one, but that's like three – things opening right there.
I gig over everything else.
Do you really?
I've never teal hunted or anything like that, and it looks like a lot of fun. And I enjoyed bow hunting. I have a crossbow now.
Yeah.
I had a traditional, not a traditional bow, but a compound. I wanted my wife to get involved more, and rather than buying two bows, I said, we'll just get a crossbow, and we can share it.
Yeah.
And so.
Right on. What kind of crossbow?
I couldn't even tell you. The cheapest one that Bass Pro sells.
One that kills deer. That's what matters.
Yeah. They shoot straight either way.
Yeah.
So what's like the – so season opens September. How long does it go?
It goes till February 15th.
Okay. What – like, is there a better time of the year? I've kind of heard once it gets colder because the fish slow down a little bit, but I don't know if that's a real thing or not.
Yeah. And the water clears up a lot more.
Okay.
Like, and it's probably your best time to go, I'm going to say, is like from Thanksgiving to the end of season because generally it's colder and that just helps the water stay clear. Hmm. And it probably does slow the fish down too. I mean, you think about it, like if you're rod and reel fishing, you catch a fish in May, how hard it fights and how much, you know, action you can give as far as tackle wise. And then you catch one like in February or March and they're just basically just dragging dead weight in.
Yeah.
That kind of makes sense because, like, especially with white bass, Cam and I went out last year when deer season, or 2 years ago when deer season was just awful, and, you know, I'm reeling in white bass. That's the first time I've ever been, and it was like, this is a lot of fun. And he's like, oh, just wait till the spring. So that makes a lot of sense. Like Cam said earlier, I've done some bow fishing. And talking with the guy who I usually go with Brian, you know, Brian, I think he prefers more of a white light. Do you like, is there a difference between like a white light or a yellowy light or anything to you?
A yellowy light will cut dingy water better.
Okay.
And so this is, we've noticed this year, we have the ability to like, I guess, I don't know, tune our lights. They can go from white.
Really?
Yeah. White to, like an amber.
Huh.
And down there at Hootentown, it's a pretty popular spot. Some years we go down there and it's just us. Mm-hmm. Like we never see anybody else. And sometimes it's pretty busy. And we can turn to that really amber light and it doesn't seem to bother the fish as bad. Where a really white light, if they're pressured, they'll dart off.
Huh. That's interesting. Even like just the color of the light can affect a fish. Like you think about, I'm more of a deer hunter. You think about that deer hunting where if they're pressured, they're, you know, you come onto a property, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have thought fish were the same way, but it makes sense. That's interesting.
So you said you choose gigging over pretty much anything else. Like it's at the top for you. Mm-hmm. What makes it so fun? I've got a couple ideas, but I don't want to plant any seeds without hearing from you first.
Well, I like being on the water. I really like being on the river. And, not always, but a lot of times we have fish fries with my family and stuff, and I like that. I like being, you know, with my family, and I provide them food for that, and I just get everybody. It's an excuse to get everybody together. Yeah. And nobody, you don't have to bring anything. I mean, it's just come and eat. That's all you have to do. It's pretty easy to talk people into that. So
yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking is you're typically not doing it by yourself. And like, whether you're having family come for the fish fry or, I mean, there's almost always other people on the boat, right?
Yeah.
What's your favorite fish to, I guess if you could gig one fish for a fish fry, what would it be? And then are there like bag limits or possession limits on those type of fish?
So primarily what we bring in is suckers. And then there's people that tell you one tastes better than the other, and I don't know that I could pick them apart. But early in the season, we do kill some carp, and a lot of people are like, you know, that's a turn your nose up kind of deal, but they're not a whole lot different. My brother-in-law and my mom prefer them to suckers, but it seems to be like we kill one, and it'll be September 15th to the 23rd, or just like that first couple weeks. And I don't know if it's they just leave out of there, or if it's because of how big they normally are that they're an easy target for somebody that comes through there.
Yeah, I don't know. You're the expert here.
I don't know. And then you're allowed 20 per person.
Okay. Of just anything, or is that
if it's. Well, it's of your rough fish.
Okay.
So right on. You can have 20 in the boat. Technically, you're supposed to have those separated. And I don't know that we've ever had enough people down there where we needed to kill more than 20.
Yeah.
That's 40 fillets.
That's a lot.
And, I mean, you're varying in sizes. We killed some, usually like later on in the year, the big red horse will run up the river. They kind of are pre-staging for spawning.
Okay.
And that's my theory anyway.
Yeah.
Because the suckers spawn in the spring, early spring. Like March 15th is when you can start grabbing for spoonbill and suckers.
Okay.
And that's what they're doing. They're making their spawning runs. And big red horse come up like at the end of January and into February. And that way, I think we killed one this year that weighed 10 pounds.
Dang. So, my only reference to like gigging is kind of like bow fishing. So why would the season for season for bow fishing be different than gigging? Like what's the difference there?
I honestly do not know. I've wondered that for as soon as I found out that bow fishing existed, when I started seeing people do it, I was like, How come they can do that all year long, but I'm restricted to a set season. Now in the rules on impounded waters, you can gig all year long.
Okay.
So
it kind of depends on where you're at a little bit, but okay, that makes more sense.
Like up here at Hootentown, you couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And I think now nobody can go out and start gigging right below Galena like at Rolly Blunk's, but based on what I'm reading in the rules, I could go down there because that's considered impounded water to Table Rock.
Interesting. The more I get into fishing and bow fishing and eventually gigging, the more I get confused on like the waters and stuff, because it seems like every body of water has its own individual set of rules.
Yeah.
And even like, I know Table Rock runs into this with like where it goes into Arkansas and the rules there and all that. So too many rules for me to keep track of. I'm going to break one of them on accident and get in trouble for it.
Yeah, they're trying to catch you. So do you mainly do gigging in the river? Is there some of that on the lake, too, and have you done any of that?
Like, on the actual part of the lake, not really. Like, you know.
Sure.
Like, for all intensive purposes, I'd call Cape Fair Table Rock Lake.
Sure.
Now, so down there, no. You probably could maybe pull into a cove, like I'd say down in where Piney Creek runs in just below Cape Fair, and maybe you could see deep enough to see a fish. I've been in there in March and seen yellow suckers when we were bass fishing in little coves, but I've never tried to just go down there and kill fish. Now, I've been below Galena, like there's a boat ramp down there called Rolly Blunk's, like I mentioned earlier, and it's basically river. It's as far as if you went down there to fish, you have to follow Table Rock Lake regulations and everything, but it flows. It's not just setting, you know, stagnant water.
Yeah.
It's maybe 5 or 6 foot deep normally at the deepest.
Gotcha.
Yeah, basically river.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't, I've only been once, maybe twice. And I remember it was the craziest thing. So I was going with a couple of buddies, and this was in high school, but one of them, he went all the time gigging. And me and my buddy, it was like our first time going, and we had such a tough time, like just getting the feel for it, trying to gauge like where they actually were.
Yeah.
And it was impressive because we were out there for I don't even know how long, and he had his 20 and like I don't even know how fast it was at this point, but he got his bag or whatever very quickly. And it was impressive because I thought it was going to be like this easy walk in the park kind of thing, just show up and shove a spear in the water. And it was not like that at all. And like to see someone who actually like knew what they were doing and had skill at it, I mean, it was pretty eye-opening for me, and that was the last time I've been. So, and we had the same issue with bow fishing too, where like we tried doing some of that night, and that was a heck of a time too. I couldn't get the hang of it, but the more that I kind of watched him, it seems like it's just you got to get out there and practice, and yeah, you kind of get a natural feel for it.
Oh, for sure.
I was gonna ask, like, so how long have you been gigging?
Probably 13 years now. I was 15 or 16 when I started going.
So you're pretty experienced.
Yeah.
At least that's what I would say. Have you noticed, like, obviously you've been out, you've been practicing, you've got better. Do you still miss quite a few fish?
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Is it just is it something that like you can't get just like perfect at?
Yeah. I mean,
have you ever had a perfect night?
I don't know. I mean, what I consider a perfect night is 20, bringing home 20 fish and they're all stuck in the head. That's my perfect.
Okay.
Night. I've never really kept track enough to say, you know, I know I've missed some. I'm mm-hmm. It's just going to happen. You're on a moving boat and you're hitting moving fish for the most part, and they can go anywhere they want to. You're kind of limited.
Yeah.
So you're going to miss. I just don't want to say it's impossible, but somebody could go out. There's probably a guy out there that can just 20 for 20 every night, but he's not me.
Your goal for next season, 20 for 20.
So how deep can you gig?
The deepest I've probably ever gig, I'm going to say, is 10 feet.
Okay.
And you could go deeper. My dad works with some guys. They work here in Nixa, but they go over to the Current River to gig. And they talk about killing fish like in 15, 16 feet of water.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
How do you even like judge where the fish is at that point?
I don't know.
That's like, because I like bow fishing, I shot at a fish, I would say probably 10 foot deep. And I hit it, but I just guessed and aimed way low and hit like, I skimmed the tail and just barely hooked into it. And it ended up actually pulling out and getting away. But I was like, how in the world do you even judge for that?
You can definitely cheat. If you can see 15 or 16 feet, you can, you know. If it's deep like that, I'm rarely gigging like straight up and down.
Yeah.
A lot of times if I see one out there, I'm coming in at a pretty sharp angle.
Okay.
I don't know. It's not cheating, but that's just what I figured. That's what works for me.
Yeah. You can give yourself an advantage.
You can go slow. Like, my gigs, pole and everything, I'm probably, you know, 15 foot long.
Okay.
And, you know, your bow fishing arrow is like 2.5, 3 yeah. foot long. So.
Dang. That's crazy.
Do you have to keep the gig like fairly sharp? Is that something that you worry about or not? Does it not really matter too
probably
much?
Probably once a year.
Okay.
I go through and just take a file, and they're not like, you know, they're not razor sharp.
Sure.
But they're probably somewhere between a knife and like a butter knife.
Gotcha.
Okay.
And it's more the way they're made is basically what creates the edge on them. You know, it's not really, they're not, you don't put a file on them too much. Just knock burrs off at high spots is all I do with a file. I'm not really putting an edge on it.
Gotcha.
Dang. Have you ever encountered the Mr. Green Jeans while out gigging?
No.
Never?
I have,
because I know we talked about, like,
you hadn't
run into anyone.
Yeah, I have one time ever on the James River seen a game warden, and he did not check my license. He was in I'm assuming, pursuit of someone else. He was in a jet boat. I was fishing on the bank. And he stopped and said, hey, have you seen anybody come up through here? And I said, no, but I literally just got here. And he said, okay, have a good day, and took off up the river.
Huh. And don't you wish you knew the end of that story?
Yeah.
Yeah, he probably found himself a customer.
So, I don't have any more questions right now because I'm just trying to comprehend fish gigging.
So, season ends fairly early. What do you do the rest of the year between, what do you say, February 15th and September 15th?
I like to turkey hunt. Turkey hunting is probably, I'm going to say, my second.
Okay.
As far as for gigging. I love the squirrel hunt and rabbit hunt.
Obviously.
Yeah.
No. Are you going to be able to turkey hunt more this year?
Yeah. I'm hoping so. Sweet. My brother-in-law and I, he's pretty much the guy I hunt with all the time. And our goal this year, we're going to try and just public land hunt. We've always private land hunted. And we're looking at, like, Piney Wilderness south of, over by Cape Fair, or Hercules Glade, down kind of by Bradleyville. And hunt the big expanses.
The Hercules Glade would be kind of fun because it would be, it's almost like it's not Missouri there. Yeah. Like, you get into the glades and it, I don't want to say it's like Colorado because it's not quite that, but you get kind of into more of that type of hunting, which would kind of be cool and challenging, especially with an Eastern.
Yeah, we're going to try it out this year. That's our big goal for this year, is to try and hunt down there.
Dang.
Why are you guys trying that?
Just something different.
Yeah.
They're too good at turkey hunting that they're like, we're going to go public land.
I don't know about that, but he and I both really enjoy turkey hunting, and we like going way out in the woods. We coon hunt. I've never coon hunted there. I've coon hunted at Piney, and you can get, it's just a huge expanse of land. Mm-hmm. Like, last time we went down there, the dogs went in them. They treated a mile deep.
Dang.
Which is terrible.
Do you have a coon dog?
I have one. At that time, I had two. I recently had one pass away. But I've got one. She's a younger one, and she's my better dog.
Yeah.
She's a lot more accurate. Her biggest problem is what they call in a coon dog word, she me toos. So if you have a dog that trees on nothing, even if she knows it's not there, she'll go tree. And she's pretty accurate as far as at least tell me when there's not one there. Because if there's not a coon in the tree, she will not lock down on it. I can watch her on my tracker. She just circles. She'll bark like she's treed, but she'll never commit to the tree. And I'd say 95% of the time go in, and if I see that, there's not a coon.
Huh.
That's crazy. Did you train her to do that, or did you take her somewhere?
She was kind of sort of started when I bought her. She'd been on drags, which is a coon hide, somebody drug and tied up, and as far as the way she does that, that was just luck. That was natural ability on her part. But
you said she was a what kind of dog did she say?
She's
a
blue tick.
Blue tick. Yeah. That's what I wanted to say.
She would not win any, like, as far as the bench shows, she would not win a bench show because she does not look like a traditional blue tick.
Buzzard Roost saddles made right here in the great state of Louisiana should be on every Louisiana bow hunter's list as a must-have in their hunting arsenal. Buzzard Roost Saddles achieves comfort through adjustability for those long day sets during the rut and also provides the maneuverability to get up and move when you see the need. Buzzard Roost Saddles was created with the need to lighten the piro as well as the backpack to go deeper than everyone else. Louisiana bow hunters are a mixed bag, and Buzzard Roost Saddles is the tool to fit any job. Whether it's public land, private land, hardwoods, pines, or even the bottomless swamps, Buzzard Roost Saddles has what you need to stay mobile.
Well, that's fine. That's not what we're worrying about. We're not worrying about shows. We're worrying about coons, and it sounds like she can tree a coon pretty well.
She can. She does do pretty good. If you put her on a spot that's got coon, that's a big thing here too. Like, if you're not putting out a bait pile, like if you don't have a corn pile, sometimes coons are few and far between. Because their food is limited. Like out there, their food is pretty limited, so they're pretty spread out. And that's how you end up a mile deep.
I don't know if I could go a mile for a coon. That'd be tough. I'm more of the big game. Like, I'll walk 100 miles for an elk or something, but a coon, I'm like, oh, that's 200 yards. Nah. I say that, but you know if I'm in that situation, I'm doing it. I like last year during turkey season, I was like, dude, there's no way I'm crawling through grass again. Like, too many ticks and and snakes. Like, I'm not doing it. Like, belly crawling through grass. Uh-uh. What did I do? Belly crawled through grass multiple times just because it's – you get in the heat of the moment.
Yeah. It's hard to pass one up when they're gobbling.
Oh, absolutely. Especially where we – because Cam and I have not had much success turkey hunting. So the way our property is set up is it's kind of in like a L shape, and it's 70 acres. So it's not a huge – like you can't just run all over the property.
Yeah.
You do that, you're done by 7 o'clock. But when we have some turkeys, some pretty good roost trees on the property. So when we hear them, it's like, or, you know, when a camera goes off, it's like, all right, let's try to make a play. Let's get on this bird before it dips onto the neighbor's property. And we've failed all but one time.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. So you said you hunt with your brother-in-law a lot, right? Wife's brother?
It's my sister's husband.
Okay, gotcha. So how, like, did you guys start hunting together after they were together? Yes, were you guys buddies before that?
After they were together.
Gotcha.
And
yep. Yeah.
I had no idea who he was until they started dating.
Yeah, and now you guys are pretty good buddies?
Yes, yeah.
That's cool. Is he about your age?
He is 4 years younger than me, same age as my sister.
Okay, gotcha. So,
same.
Yeah, this is a weird coincidence.
Right.
We're brother-in-laws, too. I don't know if we told you that or not. So, I married his sister. Yeah.
Somehow. Yeah,
respectfully. So, spring turkey hunting. Do you guys, like, are you guys the type that kind of set up and wait it out? Are you guys a little more impatient and chasing after birds?
We're very impatient.
Yeah.
We'll go after a bird. And you gotta be careful with it. I don't want to say we got it figured out, but we've messed up enough times, I guess, that we know to be a little more cautious.
So you say be a little more cautious. Is there like a system to that? Is it like, all right, we're going to call and then if the bird does this, then we'll do this, or is it kind of just feel it out?
So, yeah, pretty much feel it out. The thing that has worked the best for us, we usually sit, I'm going to say, for about an hour in the morning, maybe two, if we have a bird that's kind of working with us. But if nothing's playing out by that first hour is up, we just kind of hit the hollers, and our safety net is always before we crest the top of a holler, we call just before we crest. And we have killed several birds that way. And the reason that we started doing that is because we jumped a bunch of birds. Like, we'd call, we'd hear them gobble, and they'll move in to us. They kind of, you know, they're trying to come find that hen. Mm-hmm. And we've busted a lot of birds by accident because we weren't cautious enough. So we started, before we crest a hill, call every time.
I've heard the great say it. I've heard just the average Joe say it. But the best time to kill a turkey is like that 10 to 2, 10 to 1, 11 to 1, however you want to say it. Is that what you found when you're turkey hunting, or have you found success other times?
I would say that's probably pretty accurate. We probably kill a lot of birds closer to 9, 10, and 11 than we do right at first light.
I don't know how. But so here's my problem is, like, I'll get out there, I'll hear them gobble, then they'll, you know, they'll hen up, they'll shut up, all of that. And then, like, by 10 o'clock, I'm still not hearing anything. And I'm like, all right, I'm done. So I'm going to have to, this year I've heard so many people say it, I'm going to have to just stick it out and see if I can get it done. We're going to have to try some run and gun on some bigger property, too.
Yeah, and last year we got some pictures of Tom strutting at 11 o'clock where we were sitting an hour before, and that's a pretty awful feeling.
Question for you, since you do a lot on the James River, mm-hmm. have you ever tried to hunt turkey by, like, floating the James?
I have not. I'm sure you could do it. Me and some guys at work, they have talked about it with me, and I think you could do it if you could get them called down onto a gravel bar, because you're going to run into, like, probably property disputes mm-hmm. with landowners. Now, would somebody be down there? I don't know. But that's kind of – you're kind of probably in a gray area. If you shoot one out on a gravel bar, you're definitely safe.
Yeah.
But if one is, you know, like, so far up there, you'd have to probably really know your boundary lines.
Yeah.
You have to be safe doing that. Yeah, there's just not that much public land along the James River.
No. Well, technically, according to the law and how it's wrote, there's at least up kind of in this area, like at Delaware,
mm-hmm.
there's a ton because, like, the high water
mark. High water mark, yeah.
Well, the high water mark, if you, you know, look at it.
It's in some people's houses.
It's above houses in some areas. So I was talking with an agent. I kind of was just talking, like, how do I determine that? And he kind of just told me, like, just follow the flow of the current river. You know, as long as you're not on top of the bank, you're going to be good. So that's kind of my thing is, like, I couldn't get up on a bank mm-hmm. and kind of I'd have to be on that, like, island or gravel bar or something. And that makes it hard. And yep. then, I mean, along the James, you have some areas that kind of you have the gravel or, like, the bank, but it's more like a gravel bar that just rolls up into someone's property, and there's yeah. no real defined, like, quote unquote high water mark. So then it's like, well, where do I draw the line there?
Yeah.
I've always wanted to do it, but it's like I don't know if I feel comfortable doing it down there.
Yeah. Probably, and, you know, your better bed for something like that would be the lake.
That's yeah, kind of what sure. I thought.
You have a lot more core land to play with.
The hard part about the lake is
paddling,
and then I just don't know if I could call a turkey to the. I probably could. I've seen them come onto the shore and stuff, but I'm not a good enough turkey. I'm not confident enough in my calling to bring them onto the core land, because in some of those areas, on at least on Table Rock, it's
very small.
Yeah, it's like yeah. 200 yards, if that. So. But you could try some of the other lakes probably yeah. and have some success, and maybe you'll get lucky on some islands or something.
Do you use decoys, or do you guys just stay mobile and don't mess with the decoys?
Pretty much stay mobile. I did buy one of those, like, umbrella fan-looking deals the other
yeah.
day. I bought one of those, and I bought it last year, and I was telling him before we started, my daughter was born in February, so when turkey season started, I had, like, a 2.5-month-old. Mm-hmm. And I just was not, yeah, not into turkey hunting.
Yeah.
Last year, I just wanted to be home.
Yeah.
So we had it. I used it one time, and it was a Jake. And as soon as he saw that open up, or excuse me, come over the ridge with it, he ran off.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'd been stomped by a bigger Tom or what, but he wanted nothing to do with another Tom when he saw me.
Yeah. That's kind of, I don't want to speak for Austin, but it seems like the decoying is really finicky. Just it depends on the bird. It depends on where they are, mm-hmm. like time in the season. And we've had, I don't think we've had great luck using them. Like a lot of the times they'll see them and then they'll turn and go the other way. And mm-hmm. it's like, all right, we just hurt ourselves because of the spread that we put out there.
Don't talk bad about the funky chicken.
The funky chicken didn't work last year.
That bird came in and you could have shot it.
I could not have shot it.
We probably would have had pellets coming back at us because they hit the tree so hard and came back. But
I could have shot, but I would not have killed it.
As many of you know, I use Fit to Hunt to prepare for my elk trip. Being fit to hunt is about more than just peak physical fitness and looking good in your camo. It's about having the tools and capabilities needed to achieve your goals. Those goals that take you all over the country, exploring the wilderness, and everything nature has to offer. Fit to Hunt offers DIY workouts, personal training, and even some custom workouts. What I used was the DIY workouts. Their DIY workouts range from everything from duck hunting, to turkey hunting, to backcountry hunting, to just basic conditioning with their base conditioning program. You can get most of the DIY workouts for under $20. Go to stayfittohunt.com or follow the link in our bios to learn more.
We both would have had to shoot. We'll just agree on that.
Fine.
We could have killed that, but we should have killed that bird. And he was coming into the funky chicken. You can't deny that. He came all the way across that field.
Well, he came to a point, and then he didn't like it, and he turned the other way, and we didn't get a shot. It's not like he saw us.
I'm pretty sure he saw us, because he got something, and his head came up. Do you know what the funky chicken is?
I have seen him,
The funky chicken is amazing. I knew as soon as I saw it that, like, I saw it, and I was like, I hate this decoy. I bet a turkey will hate this decoy and even more. And first year I used it, I got that turkey. And we almost got one that we just talked about.
Yeah. That bird also, like, he was with a couple hens. And
a couple?
There was more than one hen with him.
There was, there was, like, six hens.
Okay, yeah. There were quite a few. And, like, he just stayed on the outskirts of kind of the food plot we were in. And he was just strutting and drumming, but he just didn't really want, like, he was staring it down for a while. He just didn't really want to fight it. He finally started coming over, and we just had sat up. We just sat in a kind of bad spot and couldn't really get a shot at him. Yeah. We should have killed that bird. We should have killed a couple of Jakes later on. So it's always been one of those things where it's like, all right, it kind of works. Then you find some birds that see it and they just duck out of there. They don't want to fight.
Yeah.
And so it's like, all right, would we be better off using one hen or two hens or maybe a hen? And like, there's just so many variables there that we're still trying to figure it out.
I think it comes from knowing the turkey that are in that area. Like, do you have, like, where I've been hunting with Dan, he has camera, like, trail cam pictures throughout deer season of mature toms in groups of 10 to 20. So out there, it's probably going to be wise to throw up a Jake decoy. But then, like, at the farm, we have a lot of Jakes, so it's probably not going to... I mean, we could throw up a Jake, but a hen may do better in that situation because then they'll all fight for that hen. So...
And, like, I think, so last year I hunted one place that was, it was, like, in the woods. I think for a place like that, I would rather not use a decoy just because, like, you can ambush them a little bit easier. Yeah. It's different if you're out in the middle of a field and you're trying to call them all the way across a field. Like, I feel like them having something to look at that point helps, whereas if you're just sitting under a tree and, you know, you can get it within 60 or 80 yards of them and just call them the last, you know, 50 yards or whatever, get a shot. I feel like you probably don't need a decoy as bad in that situation.
Did you get the umbrella or what kind of turkey fan did you get?
Mine is, I want to say it's the Montana decoy one. I bought it off of a website called Camo Fire. They do outdoor stuff. It's always at, like, pretty big discounts from 25 to 50% off. It changes every day. And I saw it on there and I was like, I want to try this because the videos on Facebook look really cool.
Yeah. How big is it? Is it like a normal size or is it kind of oversized for guys to like hide behind?
It's, I don't know. It's probably, I'm going to say based off the one you got up here on the wall, I'm going to say it's 4 inches wider.
Okay. So it's a fairly big,
big
shield.
It basically opens like an umbrella.
Yeah. I don't know what my buddy has. I don't know if it's a Montana or one similar, but every time we use it, it's just this giant. I mean, it's probably the same size, but it feels like it's just huge.
Yeah.
And we start going up to turkey, and it's just like, this turkey's either going to be like scared out of its mind because the thing is like three turkeys put together, or at least looks like it. Or this turkey is going to be like, have the kind of like that little dog syndrome where it's just like, I'm going to attack this thing. And I've never seen it work. I've seen videos of it working and my buddy, it's worked for him, but hasn't worked for me yet. So maybe I'm just the bad luck. So as we kind of get to the end of this podcast, we do a thing called Around Our Campfire. So we're sitting at a campfire and this is your opportunity to share either that last piece of advice or that last story that you would share with us as we're sitting around that campfire.
All right. Well, I would say, as far as that goes, if I was talking about gigging, I would probably say that, like, you don't have to have a super expensive setup to gig.
That's a question. Hold on. What does someone need to get started gigging? Okay. That was a question I had that I didn't ask.
Yeah. Like bare minimum, a flat bottom boat, a trolling motor. You can get a gig. Probably the cheapest one you can just go get, Rose Metals in Springfield. Okay. It's I haven't bought one there in a couple of years, but I think it's $55 last time I bought one. You can go to Meeks and get a closet rod, and that'll fit in there, and you can kill fish.
Have you done it from without using a boat before? Like, can that be done? Or I mean, obviously, a boat's going to be
the best. I have never done it. Well, I have done it at the house, the creek that we live on, when I was probably like 12. And that was with a frog gig. You would definitely, we just killed, there was a few fish stuck in a hole down there, and put waders on and killed them. But you would tear up that kind of gig pretty fast in the river, just because of how rocky it is.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, sorry to interrupt, but back to the around our campfire. I wanted to get that question in for when I start gigging.
But yeah, like a small flat bottom boat, whatever you're comfortable being in. Like I said, we gigged out of a little one for a long time.
Yeah.
And a little cheap trolling motor on there, gig and a gig pole, and pretty much it. That's really you can get pretty cheap 12-volt LED lights on Amazon.
Yeah.
That's what we ran for a long time before we got the lights we have now.
Right on.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of fun. And I think, honestly, the reason that we haven't done it is because there kind of is that barrier to entry just of, you know, having to spend, you're going to have to spend a little bit of money to do it.
Yeah.
But I know that we'd go all the time. I'm constantly sending him boats. I'm just hoping that one of them is a good enough deal for him to buy one. So I know if I send him enough, he'll end up getting one eventually.
You realize I'm like trying to go to Alaska to hunt. Like I can't. Actually, we have to cut that part out. I haven't announced that yet. So
cut.
Make sure you cut that.
I'll try and remember, but
I'll remember.
Yeah.
Cut that. You don't know. You didn't hear that.
The bear, that is like a big thing as far as like guys my grandpa's age and older, they all went. Like, you very rarely run into somebody unless they just lived in the middle of a metropolitan area around here that didn't gig at least several times. Then you get into like guys my dad's age where it went like guys my grandpa's age, they were using propane lights to gig.
Dang.
That's crazy.
And then they started running like halogen lights and having to have a generator to run those. There's no battery for that. And so a lot of guys my dad's age, they didn't go because, you know, you got to buy a generator. You got to have those lights and, you know.
Yeah,
and then there's like the added piece of, all right, now you got a boat that you got to put somewhere. Like, I live in the middle of town and I've got a backyard and so does he, but, you know, depending on the boat, you can't get it in the backyard. And, you know, there's just pieces there that, like, if they all came together, I mean, we'd be down there every weekend. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's tough, but it's also addicting. Like, from the couple times that I've done it, it's fun. I definitely see how people can get into it. Well, I think we're going to go ahead and wrap this one up. Jacob, man, thank you for being on tonight.
Thanks for having me,
guys. Yeah, it's always awesome meeting local people and just getting to build a relationship, especially with some river folk. Yeah. We haven't had a lot of people that are really into fishing, gigging, that sort of sphere of things. We've had people on who like hunting, but it's awesome getting to meet a friendly face that kind of fishes the same waters that we fish.
And one more thing, can you share where people can find you on social media? I know you're doing the Outdoors, right?
Yes, James River Outdoors is something my wife kind of pushed me to do, and it's just, I don't know, stuff I like, basically, is what it is. Some local history, some stuff I go do.
That's been my favorite part is the local history, just seeing that and going, like, you know, we use it every day, but we don't realize it's been used, like the James, we don't realize it's been used for centuries, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so that it's really cool seeing those. So if you're from this area or if you're not, go check that out because there's a lot of history being shared that wouldn't honestly forgotten history in some areas. So it's really cool to see that. So appreciate you being on and appreciate you doing that.
Thank you.